40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off in California's northern city of San Jose, where the U.S. men's national soccer team is preparing for two crucial 2018 World Cup qualifying matches. The Americans will host Honduras Friday night in San Jose, and then 4 days later, on March 28th, they'll play Panama in Panama City. During a recent Facebook live chat, the USA's head coach, Bruce Arena, talked about the importance of the two World Cup qualifiers.
This is a very important game for the U.S. team. We need to win the game. There's certainly going to be some tension and pressure, but that's all part of it. We have elite athletes, and they're accustomed to playing in games like this, so I'm confident they'll show up and be in the right kind of frame of mind to be ready to play and perform well. If you put pencil to paper here, we go nowhere unless we come out of these games with points. And by that, I mean 3 points or more. And my goal is to get six. We need to get three in the Honduras game, and we need to go to Panama and be aggressive and get at least a point.
The USA currently has no points and is at the bottom of its 16 group in this final hexagonal stage of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. All six teams in this group have 8 World Cup qualifiers remaining. The top 3 teams in the group will qualify for Russia 2018, and the 4th place team will advance to inter-confederation playoffs. Coach Arena was brought back to coach the U.S. team and replace the German Jurgen Klinsmann after the Americans lost World Cup qualifiers to Mexico and Costa Rica. Arena's focus now is Honduras on Friday night, and he expects an enthusiastic, supportive crowd in San Jose.
We selected San Jose because we think it's a great venue. It's a beautiful stadium. The San Jose Earthquake have had a great following there. Our women's national team has played there with a great following. And we think on the 24th, we're going to have simply an outstanding crowd supporting the U.S. team. So I think it's a great venue, and it's going to position us to play well and win the game.
That's Bruce Arena, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, and he was speaking during a recent Facebook live chat. In more soccer news, you might say Ghanaian referee Joseph Lamptey has received the ultimate red card. He's been banned for life by FIFA, World Football's governing body, for what it describes as match manipulation. The 42-year-old Lamptey awarded a disputed penalty for host South Africa against Senegal in a 2018 World Cup qualifying match last November. He penalized Senegalese defender Kalidou Koulibaly for a handball, but replays clearly showed the ball hit his knee. South Africa's Tolani Halachwayo stepped up and converted the penalty kick to give his team a 1-0 lead in the 42nd minute. South Africa went on to win the match in Polokwane 2-1 and is now in second place in Group D of African World Cup qualifying with 4 points after 2 matches. Senegal is in third place with 3 points. And this scheduling note for our Voice of America football fans: African World Cup qualifying will resume on Monday, August 28th, when there will be 10 matches. Getting back to Joseph Lamptey, the Ghanaian referee who received the ultimate red card, Well, he can still appeal his ban for life penalty to FIFA and the Court of Arbitration for Sport. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. American-style football news now on the VOA. The National Football League will hold its annual draft of top collegiate players next month in the eastern U.S. city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 2 years ago, the NFL club based here in the Washington area, the Washington Redskins, selected the big guard, 24-year-old Ari Quanjo, with the 112th overall pick in the draft. And 3 years ago, Ari's younger brother, 23-year-old Cyrus, an offensive tackle, was selected with the 44th pick overall in the draft by the Buffalo Bills. The Quanjo brothers both played at the University of Alabama, one of the powerhouses in American-style college football, and each of the brothers won two national titles. The Quanjo brothers grew up right here in the Washington area, where their parents immigrated from Cameroon when they were young boys. Last year, Ari Quanjo became a U.S. citizen. Former VOA reporter and Washington Redskins historian Mike Richman, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia, caught up with Ari Quanjo in the locker room. And Mike asked Ari how it feels to officially become an American.
It feels pretty good. I don't know. It feels good. I mean, I grew up here, so it doesn't really change things. You know, I've been here for a while, and, you know, my parents are really, really happy, and I'm very happy with it, and I'm just happy to represent. I can vote and stuff like that, and that's something I've always kind of wanted to be part of, so it's awesome. It's a great pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any special ties to Cameroon or Africa? Did you live there for any period of time?
Yeah, I lived there until I was six. My parents are from there. We're Cameroonian, naturally, and then... I mean, yeah, that's where my family's from. That's where, like, my family's always been from.
Were you a Redskins fan growing up?
I didn't watch much football growing up, but I did grow up in the area, and my older brother was a Redskins fan. So if there was a team, yeah, it'd probably be the Redskins.
Would have been the Redskins.
Yeah.
You played at the Mac.
Yep.
So you saw a lot of the Redskins.
Yeah, I did. And it's just that by then... You know, all I wanted to do whenever I was growing up as a little kid is watch cartoons on Sundays with The Simpsons and all that stuff. And, you know, it was my older brother who wanted to watch football until I started playing football and stuff like that in the eighth grade. And at that point, you know, I was so into DeMatha that I didn't watch much football. But I remember playing at the PG Sports and Learning Complex where DeMatha has a lot of their home games. And I used to... once in a while, I would look up and look at the Redskins Stadium, you know, during the game and stuff like that, and, you know, just envision how I'd play there one day. And it's happened, so it's a dream come true, literally.
A dream come true for Washington Redskins guard Ari Quanjo. And Ari was talking with former VOA reporter and Washington Redskins historian Mike Richman, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia. 2017 is a big anniversary year for the Voice of America. We're celebrating the 75th anniversary of our first broadcast. And joining us now with a special VOA 75 anniversary message is VOA Director Amanda Bennett.
Seventy-five years ago, Voice of America made its first broadcast. Today, we broadcast in over 45 languages all over the world. We broadcast in every means that people could possibly want to receive their news and information. We use radio still. We use television. We broadcast for the web, for mobile, and if new forms of communication are invented, we'll be there too. Our mission is really, really simple. We give neutral, fair, objective, independent news and information to people who have no other access to it. And we tell America's story. And America's story is rich and full. It goes from the entrepreneurial climate of Silicon Valley to our great universities to health and medicine and medical advances. It's also the story of America's diaspora, the people who came here from all over the world. I started my journalistic career more than 50 years ago, and here today at Voice of America, I remember just why I became a journalist. It's such a privilege to be working here with the great men and women who are telling America's story and providing neutral news and information around the world. I'm so happy to be here at Voice of America as it celebrates its 75th anniversary, and I feel proud to welcome it into the next 75 years.
Mates, remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Tennis news now on the Voice of America. Swiss star Roger Federer has moved up 4 places to number 6 in the world after his 90th career singles title in Southern California. Federer defeated fellow Swiss Stan Wawrinka in straight sets to win a record-tying 5th BNP Paribas Open trophy in Indian Wells, California. The victory in Indian Wells came after the 35-year-old Federer won his record-extending 18th Grand Slam singles title at the Australian Open in January. Taking a quick look at the 5 players ahead of Roger in the world rankings, Britain's Andy Murray is number 1, Novak Djokovic of Serbia is number 2. Wawrinka is number 3. Japan's Kei Nishikori is number 4. And Milos Raonic of Canada is number 5. From California, Roger Federer is traveling across the United States to Florida for this week's Miami Open tournament. Before leaving Indian Wells, Federer talked about his tour schedule and balancing competition with the demands of being a father to 4 young children.
It's simple. When you play less events, the events become more important overall. When you play more, you can go into them just saying, okay, let's see what happens, you know, and I think a lot of players play, that's why they play more events, because they can play with less pressure. So I clearly play with more pressure because I play fewer events. And that's why I think the balance between playing and not playing is really important for me, because at the events I need to be somewhat serious, you know, about the tournament. We flew around the globe, beat a 12-hour jet lag with the kids, and, you know, we tried to get over that as quick as possible. Yet I tried to be a good dad and good husband and tried to figure all that part out as much as I can. So the days don't finish too late for me. I unfortunately have to do massage sometimes during the day, which I don't enjoy doing, because then that takes time away from spending time with the kids. Energy, I have to manage that as well. You know, everybody knows what I'm going through. Even the girls know, understand, you know, that I sometimes have to sleep well at night. I can't be woken up every morning, you know, like that is almost the case. So it's great fun, and that's why scheduling is not just what my goals are as a tennis player, but also so I can align it with Mirka and my kids, that I know I'm not asking too much from them as well. And that's why after Miami, actually, the rest of the year is actually fairly easy when it comes to time change. It's really the first 3-4 months which are kind of tough, with Australia back and forth and Dubai, and then here. The rest is actually fairly easy.
That Swiss tennis star Roger Federer, and Roger was talking in Indian Wells, California. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a wonderful photo of Namdi Hollywood Moweta, our reigning prince of pugilistics, with Kenyan athlete Alicia Barno, the overall winner in Sunday's Los Angeles Marathon. Namdi and Alicia are both wearing bright orange warm-up jackets, and they look simply delighted to be in each other's company. I'm delighted to have in my company right now Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. It is a delight to be here, as always.
Delightful indeed. What is trending out there in the sports world?
Well, you were just talking about Roger Federer a short time ago, and many consider him to be the GOAT, the greatest of all time in tennis. Well, another sportsman considered the GOAT in his sport is Tom Brady. Many consider him, as much as it pains me to say that, as a New York Jets fan, a rival of the Patriots, Tom Brady considered by many to be the greatest of all time in the National Football League. And he's been making some headlines, actually kind of an odd story, because Tom Brady's in the social media headlines. We're not in the football season, and we're talking about the Super Bowl, even though it was 6-7 weeks ago. And that's because right after the Super Bowl this year, after the Patriots came back and won in the first overtime game ever in the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's jersey that he wore in the game was stolen. Mm. And this has been a caper that's gone on for the past 6 or 7 weeks. Nobody knew where the jersey was. It was a very bizarre situation. People wondering if someone stole it to try to sell it, if it was a collector. And we finally got word this week that the jersey has been recovered. And not only has that jersey from Super Bowl 51 been recovered, but a jersey that he wore in Super Bowl 49 as well. And this is only after the Federal Bureau of Investigation got involved here in the United States, because apparently it was revealed that the jersey had crossed international borders.
Interesting.
Yes. And as we learned today, and as social media is reacting to, it was discovered in Mexico. It was taken by a gentleman who was the head of Mexico's largest newspaper company, who had access to the Super Bowl, who apparently swiped it up while he was there. And not just Tom Brady's jerseys, they also, they apparently have recovered from this company cleats and a helmet from Von Miller from the Denver Broncos, who won Super Bowl 50. So a lot of intrigue about this, how this gentleman was able to get these items and get them back to Mexico. A lot of money on the line. That Super Bowl 51 jersey has been appraised at $500,000. So a lot of people interested in getting that back. Tom Brady, I'm sure, chief among them. My favorite tweet is someone said, freedom has been restored because the FBI has found Brady's Super Bowl jersey. So a lot of excitement about that, but a very bizarre caper out of the sports world.
Andrew, I'm just guessing that official from the Mexican media house might have a tough time getting a press pass to the next Super Bowl.
You know, the company, it's called OEM, they released a statement saying that he left his position earlier this month. They didn't elaborate. I don't know if that was an internal investigation that turned this up and then he left, or if it was before this all went down. But needless to say, he is no longer working for that company.
Has Tom Brady come out on social media at all to comment?
Not that I've seen, but he may, after it's reunited, we might see a press conference or something where he holds it up in the air and a lot of social media attention on that.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, we've been talking for the past week, week and a half about March Madness, the NCAA college basketball tournament. We've talked a lot about the men's tournament, but at the same time, we also have the NCAA women's tournament. The women's tournament tends to go more by the high seeding. There aren't as many upsets. But there are two big ones this year that I want to talk about that are trending on social media. The first is the University of Oregon. They're a number 10 seed. They beat number 7 Temple in the first round, and then last night took out the number 2 seed Duke in the second round. They'll face number 3 Maryland, of course, just up the road from us, this Saturday. They're reaching their first Sweet 16 ever, and another setback for Duke, as we talked about. The men's team went out in an upset over the weekend. Well, the women's team is now out as well. Apparently, they were missing their star point guard due to injury. A lot of fans of Duke disappointed. A lot of fans generally of women's basketball disappointed that they wouldn't get that Duke-Maryland matchup, which was expected to be an exciting one. But the Maryland fans are excited because they think they have an easier path to get now to the Elite Eight and further. And the Oregon fans are excited because they get to keep playing.
And probably awaiting down the road one of those teams, maybe another team, the Lady Huskies from the University of Connecticut.
Yeah.
Just a dominating squad.
In fact, this is an interesting statistic about how dominant they are. ESPN said in all the brackets that people filled out for the women's tournament, 65% of brackets filled out picked UConn to win the championship. So unheard of numbers. I think on the men's side, the most that any team got was maybe 15 or 16%. So 65% of brackets picking UConn to win the whole thing.
Mm.
Also, they mentioned in their statistics, just 13% of brackets in the women's tournament picked Quinnipiac winning in the first round. Quinnipiac is a 12 seed in the tournament. Not only did they win in the first round, they won in the second round. They're going to their first Sweet 16 ever in school history. They're also only the fourth team in NCAA women's basketball tournament history to make it to the Sweet 16 as a 12 seed. So a lot of excitement from Quinnipiac University in Connecticut, along with University of Connecticut. A lot of fun videos coming out from campus, just like we saw with South Carolina with the men's team when they won and had that big upset. Same thing with Quinnipiac University. One viral video had Coach Trisha Fabry. She got surprised by her players. They're all waiting and kind of hiding behind this door in the locker room. And she walks in and they dump a big cooler of water on top of her, and she said that she needed that to cool down after that hot game. And then the other viral video, her son in the stands celebrating, and while you can't hear what he says in the video, if you read lips, he says, "We're going to the blanking Sweet 16," with blank being a word that we can't say on the radio. So they said, if you can read lips, you'll see that he's excited. And just a lot of excitement, not just among the students and the faculty at Quinnipiac, but it's really nice to see a lot of the other sports teams supporting the women. In case in point, we have the Quinnipiac softball team. They tweeted out a series of emojis, dancing lady, basketball, smiley face, and a cat. Of course, the Quinnipiac team is the Bobcats. And they wrote, "Believe, round three, fight." And then they put a bunch of boxing gloves. So showing their love, a lot of the Quinnipiac teams showing their love for the women's team and hoping they can continue this Cinderella run. That's another term we've been seeing a lot of. You know, when they call a team that goes on and wins, defies expectations, they're a Cinderella team. Well, they're a Cinderella team in Quinnipiac.
A fairy tale story. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. And that wraps up the March 21st, I think it's spring edition of the Sunny
doesn't
Side
feel
of
like
Sports.
Spring.
It doesn't. Still quite chilly here in Washington. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past two decades, much of East Africa has suffered through recurrent droughts resulting in failed crops, dying cattle, and escalating food prices. The result is hunger, undernutrition, and suffering for millions of people. This year, the rains have been scant, more so than usual. This is exacerbating drought in the Horn of Africa, particularly in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya, where around 15 million people are suffering from food insecurity as a result. The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FUSENET, which is funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development as well as the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit for Somalia, are sounding the alarm in Somalia. They estimate that half of Somalia's population of 12.3 million people is facing hunger or starvation. The southern agricultural and pastoral areas and northeastern pastoral areas have been hardest hit. Over the past few years, food insecurity has been dropping in Ethiopia. The number of people requiring humanitarian assistance there has declined by half since late 2015. But as last year's October to December rains failed and drought conditions developed in the country's southern and southeastern regions, farmers and herders who had been unable to recover from the previous drought are once again in need of assistance. According to the government of Ethiopia and its relief partners, some 5.6 million people will need relief food assistance between January and December 2017. Kenya is also suffering from inadequate rainfall during both the March to May 2016 long rain season and the October to December short rain season. In some parts of northern Kenya, 70% of water sources are already dry and people are already suffering hunger. FUSENET projected in January that without sustained relief assistance, crisis-level acute food insecurity could occur in some drought-affected areas of Kenya in the coming months. So far this year, the United States government has committed more than $282 million for critical relief interventions in the Horn of Africa. We call on our global partners to join us in this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Join host Lenore Modou, reassessing your health stress in 2017 with Ken Red Cross, internal medicine and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Africa land reform. The World Bank says that Africa needs to change its systems for buying and selling land. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.